Well, hello once again. Welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I am Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday, post-fun drive Monday, here on the Arts Magazine Show, right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. I want to thank all of you for phoning in and helping to support community radio, KKFI. You still can. Are the phones still hooked up to that particular number? Maybe, maybe not. But you can call, if you still want to, 888-931-0901. Or I know you could still go online at kkfi.org and make your pledge. Or you could just call our regular office number and make a pledge as well. If you still want to get in on the act, officially the fun drive is over. But, hey, always a good time to call Community Radio KKFI and pledge your support to Community Radio. And we thank so many of you. I was a bit overwhelmed by all of the contributions I got last Monday. So thank you so much for calling in, for making your pledge, helping support this program and Community Radio. Pledged on a number of different shows. Had a lot of fun Friday night on The Real Deal. We broke their record as well down there. So thank you so much for help pledging. And, of course, you can pledge anytime you're around, especially during the fun drives, is a great thing to do. Well, we have guests today. We're going to talk about two shows, some of which you may not have heard of before. In the first half hour, Kansas City Public Theater will join us. They have a presentation going on tonight at the Uptown Arts Bar, 3611 Broadway, where they will be presenting the play Dads by Derek Troutwine. With us to tell us all about Kansas City Public Theater, Elizabeth Bettendorf Bowman. She is the Executive Artistic Director of Kansas City Public Theater. She has taught and directed at such places as the Coterie, the Corbin Theater. The Corbin is an interesting little space. It's small, but they do good shows up there at the Corbin Theater in Liberty, Missouri, at the Kansas City Fringe Festival, at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, where she also did publicity over there, the Kansas City Repertory Theater, and probably others along the way as well. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
We have communicated on emails numerous times over the years.
Yes, probably for at least 2 years.
Yeah, so yeah. Really, but I'd never met her before, so I recognized the name, but not so much the face. And you'll get used to that because in radio, people don't know what we look like unless they go to the website and check it out. Sometimes people recognize my voice, but not often. So no one knows who you are. You have anonymity when you're on the radio. Nathan Bowman is with us as well. He is a Native American theater artist. He has trained at the Second City in Chicago. He's going to get some questions about that. And the Suzuki acting method. And I told him off the air, I am very familiar with the Suzuki violin method, but not the Suzuki acting method. It's not the same, Dr. Suzuki?
Not the same, no.
I know a woman who traveled to Japan and learned personally under Dr. Suzuki over there. Did you meet your Dr. Suzuki?
I've been in the same room as him, but the room was very packed and everybody wanted to shake hands, so unfortunately I wasn't able to get my hand in there.
Well, we can get into this more later if we have time, but yeah. How is the Suzuki method different from, say, the Actor Studio method?
Yeah, so Suzuki, the method was developed by Japanese director Tadashi Suzuki. And he really developed it as a way of approaching Western theater works, you know, Greek theater, Shakespeare, all of that, but sort of using and adapting acting methods from the Japanese no theater, which, if you're unfamiliar, that's the traditional historical acting theater of Japan. So he adapts that to do Western works.
I see.
Yeah.
So that's the system that they use when they do things that are outside of their culture.
Yeah, or at least for him it is. He sort of adapted those traditional Japanese techniques, and it's very formalized, highly choreographed stuff. So
we wouldn't see a Red Skelton or a Robin Williams doing the Suzuki method.
Oh, no. No.
I see. Okay. Very good. Very good. Has worked in several area theaters and several area theater, film, and television productions. The Kansas City Repertory Theater, you have a position over there as well. And you're working on your PhD in theater over at KU.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're also involved with Kansas City Public Theater. Which one of you wants to tell us about Kansas City Public Theater? Is this fairly new?
Yeah, actually, we, I think we became an official nonprofit on November 30th, 2017.
So, very new.
So, very, very new. This is our very first coming out the gate production that we're going to kick off our company with coming up tonight.
Now, the Public Theater in New York is quite big.
Yes.
I guess you're starting smaller.
We are a lot smaller. There are actually quite a few different public theaters around the United States that really, they take after the idea that Joe Papp had, which is free theater for all. It needs to be accessible. And that's really our main mission. I know Nathan can talk a lot about it as well.
I know, Joe, you mentioned Joe Papp. He was known for Shakespeare in the Park.
Yes.
In Central Park, that was one of his, and that was the New York Public Theater that presented that.
Yes.
So have you seen one of those productions before?
Yeah, this summer we saw Julius Caesar.
That infamous production where they staged Julius Caesar as Donald Trump that everybody was talking about. Yeah, we saw that this summer, yeah.
Yeah.
But we definitely took Joe Papp and his writings and his inspiration behind the public theater. I mean, that was definitely an inspiration for us. So it's not an accident that some of our stuff may sound a little familiar for those familiar with the public.
So you decided at some point, probably before that, that you wanted to start a public theater here in Kansas City. There's a lot of theater competition out there, as you know, but you're doing yours, at least you're starting different. You're starting with a production that will be tonight at the Uptown Arts Bar, 36, I have it down here, 3611 Broadway. Oh, the number, well, there's a number to call. I don't know, maybe, should I give that one, or do you want me to save that one, the 402 number?
Oh, if that's fine.
Well, it's up to you. You're the one that has to field the calls.
Sure, that's great.
402-443-7295, or online, of course. They have a website, kcpublictheater.org. That's tonight at 7 o'clock at the Midtown Arts Bar, where a lot of people I interview have productions going on down there, and you'll be there tonight.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we love the Uptown Arts Bar. I mean, they've been a... We reached out to them to do this monthly program, First Mondays, with them, and they were super helpful and super excited to, you know, help us get started and have this really cool community program. So we're happy to be working with them.
Well, how did you decide what play to do? You're doing the play Dads by Derek Troutwine. So you had to assemble, we had to figure out which play you're doing. You had to assemble some actors to do the show. So why Dads?
It's written by Derek Troutwine, and he's a very good friend of ours, and we've collaborated with him on multiple projects over the years. And because of that, and because we've, you know, worked with him before, he was one of the first people we just decided to reach out to and ask if, because I know he happens to always have something in the works. So I reached out to him, like, what are you at? Want to try the staged reading thing? And he had this play, Dads, and he sent me a copy of it. And it was just, Derek is a father, and he has been a father for the past few years now. And it changed his life. And this play, while it's tragic in some aspects, it's very heartfelt. And it's him really coming to terms with how becoming a dad has changed his life in a very positive way. So it's not all bright and happy, so I don't want to mislead anybody. But it's such a heartfelt piece, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that will be at 7 o'clock tonight. Will Derek be present?
He will. And after the... staged reading, we're going to have a brief talk back with him. So anybody that comes and wants to give him some questions or some feedback, I mean, that'd be great.
Tell us about the characters in the story.
Yeah, so the story takes place in a hospital waiting room, and the main character is Steven, and he is very stressed out and anxious. His wife is passed out in the ER, and I won't give any spoilers, but we don't, at the start of the show, know why he's so worried and why he's not allowed to see her. And so coming into that, into this stressful situation, his younger brother, Larson, who he doesn't really get along with, comes to show his support. And so it becomes a little bit of a family drama between Larson and Steven, and it becomes a little bit about their relationship and... at the same time, Larson, the younger brother, is also a dad. So it becomes about their relationship, but also about how each one views this idea of becoming a dad. So,
that's true.
And then there's a mom and a dad, and another main character is the OBGYN who talks to Stephen a lot.
Well, so. you know Derek Troutwine. What inspired him to write this? You talked about him becoming a father. What touched him to want to write it as a play? Play is a very difficult medium to do.
It is, and actually, his original idea for this piece was not a play at all. He wanted to do a YouTube series called Silly Dads. It was just going to be a series of skits about dads talking about being dads and the sort of nuances and hijinks that go on with that. But then I think he decided he wanted, there was some deeper character stuff that he wanted to work out. And so he thought that the stage would be the best place to do that.
You can still do both, you know.
Yeah.
You can do the play. You can put excerpts of that on YouTube, on your YouTube presentation, along with the hijinks that
sure.
you would want to do. You're really unlimited in this day and age.
It's true.
It used to be there were very few places that you could showcase your work. Now there's so many, it's
yeah.
often hard to find things as well. Speaking with Elizabeth Bettendorf Bowman and Nathan Bowman, they are Kansas City Public Theater. They have their production of Dads coming up tonight at 7 o'clock at the Uptown Arts Bar. The address is 3611 Broadway. The website for more information, kcpublictheater.org. So you're going to be sandwiched in between some other arts organization and another arts organization. And that's the way it works at the Uptown Arts Bar.
Yeah, it's really great. It's a wonderful place. It's a great idea that they had to have this communal type place for all sorts of arts organizations. So there's always going to be something going on.
Yeah. All kinds of things going on. Is you going to be doing this on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, we will be there every first Monday of the month. Right now we have staged readings that we're doing. If you would like, as a playwright, to be a part of a staged reading, you can contact us. You can email us at kcpublictheater@gmail.com. And we would love to talk more about it. If you're interested in auditioning, you can also find out more information at our website. And you can email us, too.
What kinds of things are you looking for? Is any parameters? It has to be within a certain length of time because you only have a certain slot there at the Arts Bar.
Yeah, so usually we're looking for no more than an hour.
90 minutes
is probably the longest we can go. As far as content, we really want to feature all of the talent that we have in Kansas City. So if you're from the area and you're a playwright, we would love to give you a platform so we can talk more about what affects us as Kansas Cityans, what interests us as a community.
Now, you get to, does the playwright get to pick the talent who's going to do the show?
Well, we do work really closely with our playwrights, and ultimately it is the director's decision of who can get cast or who's available. Oftentimes somebody would love to be a part of the play, but they just can't make it, so we have to find who's available, who's the best for the role. And so it is a collaboration between the playwright and the director.
So talent that might be interested, playwrights that might be interested. Of course, you'll want to read the script.
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay. And kind of narrow things down a little bit for them. But any particular area of interest you're looking for more than anything else? Some people are into political these days.
You know, right now we have three stage readings that are lined up for the next few months, and they are quite different. We have Dads, as we've been talking about, which is, I guess the genre is much more of realism. Whereas our next play, Her Own Devices, is by Lindsay Adams. And there's a lot of magic that happens in that play.
It's very surreal.
But they're quite different. But the thing that is similar about both of them is they're from local playwrights. And they
sort of reflect issues that people in Kansas City think about and are concerned with, even if they're not literally about Kansas City, you know, which, you know, the plays are something that we hope local audiences, the themes of these plays, they can get behind. And it's not too detached from the experience of Kansas Cityans.
Now, it is being done in the style of staged reading. It used to be called Reader's Theater sometimes. It's called both. You know? So, but, you know, what can the people expect? There'll be the actors standing up in the arts bar and reading this script.
Yeah, we go a bit further than that. We do strive to make it more of a storytelling experience. And so Nathan's actually directing our first production, so he has a better idea of what you'll see tonight.
Yeah, you mentioned how it used to be called Reader's Theater. I used that as a little bit of inspiration for this staged reading tonight. I figure if it's going to be a staged reading, let's really play up this aspect that we're reading, that we're telling a story behind music stands and on stools, you know. I really wanted to play, I mean, at least in the format that you'll see tonight, you know, we're not performing a fully produced show, so why even try to act like it? Let's really highlight the fact that this is a reader's piece. This is a more of a storytelling in a way than it is the performance of a play.
It's coming back. It used to be that there were a lot of things done. I remember back in the 80s and 90s, there were several different groups that did every month did a show like that from a playwright. Pat Baker, the late Pat Baker, she had one every month down there. At a different location, of course. But she did something like that. And I remember having a discussion with her talking about how that had become a lost art before she picked it up again. And it really had, back in the era of live radio broadcast. That's what they did, essentially. They had an audience. Most of the time they had an audience. War of the Worlds did not have an audience. It was strictly done in a studio. But a lot of the shows did have an audience. And you see newsreels of the actors reading the script, and then as they would finish each page, they just toss the page on the floor because it just get it out of your way. I can only hold so many papers at one time. And that's the way a lot of those live radio broadcasts were done. So this is kind of a way of bringing it back. So if you're of that era and you enjoy that, just imagine as you're looking at Dad's at the F-Down Arts Bar, that it might also be live on the radio as well.
Yeah, it very well could be. You know?
Are you planning on expanding beyond stage readings into maybe someday doing a full production somewhere?
Yes, we're actually... So we have the staged reading program, the first Monday of every month. We have another community program we're developing called Kansas City Voices, which is going to be sort of a staged reading program, but without an actual play and with where we get community members involved in the process. But we're also planning ahead for our inaugural first season, which will start this fall in 2018 and go into 2019. And yeah, we'll actually be producing fully produced works as part of that first season, and we'll hopefully get that announcement out by April, May.
So you'll have a regular season.
Yeah.
So you'll be thrown into the bowels, so to speak, of all these other theaters in town. What are you going to do that's make sure it's a little bit different so that you stand out?
Well, I think so. Our primary mission is to present theater that's free. We'll never charge admission.
Okay.
It's free and accessible to the public. And I think what that means is we have to find more creative ways of doing certain things because we can't expect ticket revenue to help support us.
What do they do at the Shakespeare Festival?
So
refer to it as free will.
Yes, free will.
That's kind of how it works.
I mean, you know, you could very well see us performing a play on a sidewalk corner at some point, you know? I mean, and I'm only slightly being hyperbolic when I say that. I mean, we're going to find various ways of exploring venues and different locations throughout town to perform theater. You know, outside of the traditional renting a theater space for a week and presenting a play. I think the fact that we're doing free theater necessitates that we're a little bit more creative with how we present our projects. But I think it's a challenge that we both are excited to undertake, you know, finding ways that we can bring theater to the public outside of traditional venues. So,
well, since you've worked with the Rep for a number of years now, you probably have heard of Guerrilla Theater and even met some of those folks.
Mm-hmm.
They did a Greek show every June on the steps of the Nelson. And they also, for a few years, while the Nelson was rehabbing the back area, they did some in the park across the street. To think of anything like that, you know, Joe Papp was in Central Park the shows still are in Central Park every summer.
We're definitely considering things like that. We've been talking with various people throughout, you know, the city, trying to work. You know, I don't want to spoil too much right now because these announcements are to come. But certainly, and I mean, Greek theater in particular for me is sort of my area of study and background. Yeah. So specifically doing Greek theater, I guess I could go ahead and say it. Like we have Medea coming up, an adaptation that I'm working on. So we're definitely going to explore that as well.
Ah, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You were kind of connecting mentally on that level right now. Yes, indeed. We're speaking with Elizabeth Bettendorf Bowman and Nathan Bowman. They are Kansas City Public Theater. I assume you two started it together.
Yes, we did. Yeah. We are obviously married, but we started out as collaborators, you know, probably 10 years ago by now. And so we've always had a really great working relationship, and we work well together. We have a similar vision for what we want to see in the community, and so it seemed like a natural culmination is to bring it all together and create a theater company together.
Well, I think I'm sure you realize from your own experiences how hard it is for people, especially a couple, to start a theater.
Yes.
Very difficult. Yeah. First-hand knowledge of that, so to speak. And you know how difficult it can be. I guess you have to get people to work with you and, maybe get yourself a board.
We do have a board, yes.
Any prominent Kansas Cityans on that board?
They're all prominent.
What do you mean? They're great. They are all something that we specifically really wanted to look at in board members and inviting them to be a part of our organization is their involvement with the community and their love of the city. And so while they may not be household names, they are deeply embedded in a lot of community activities and other organizations as well.
Yeah, I guess the challenge is to put your mark on something so that you stand out from the many, many, and I know there's many because I do this show, there's many, many groups out there all needing publicity at various times, you know, all needing a little help getting the word out. I mean, their projects are great, but they need work getting them out because if people don't know that the project is there, they don't know where to go to see it. But you can see Kansas City Public Theater's presentation of Dads tonight, February the 5th, at the Uptown Arts Bar, the 7 o'clock p.m. It's at 3611 Broadway. It's a unique little location and organization and lots of different groups. The Storytellers are there a lot. Or one of the groups before or after you, one of the Storyteller groups. Do you know?
I'm sure that I do.
Oh, that's okay. They're there a lot.
Okay. I know that.
And that's what's happening tonight. But you could see something at the Arts Bar probably any day or evening of the week. They're pretty well booked. Probably still are.
Yeah.
But the presentation of the Kansas City Public Theater of Dads will be tonight at 7 o'clock p.m. Their website, if you want to check them out for this or future endeavors, kcpublictheater.org. We just have a few minutes left, but people that know me knows I like to pursue things like this. The Suzuki method and other methods associated with that, you know, that would be different than I know of Dustin Hoffman and I know of Al Pacino. I know how they like to live their roles. When does various roles, especially the role he did in Midnight Cowboy, which I know is before your time, actually dressed up scruffy, grew a beard, went out on the streets of Manhattan and wandered around like a homeless man, which is the character he played in the show. That's the Actors Studio method. And Suzuki, right. of course, is different than that.
Totally the opposite method of that. The Suzuki method, it's really all about it's really all about how you use your body. It's a completely non-psychological method to approaching acting. It's highly stylized. It comes from a background in which, in order to communicate sadness, you must put your hand in this specific position. It's highly, because the no theater in which inspired Tadashi Suzuki, it's highly codified like that, where they have a series of gestures and each gesture has a meaning. And so it comes from a background like that. But I think the philosophy of it is that, as opposed to, you know, feeling something psychologically to inform your performance, I think it's sort of reverse, whereas, you know, what you're doing with your body can elicit the emotional response from the actor, okay. right? And I think we've all been there before. If you stub your toe, you get angry. You know, something that happens to your body affects how you feel as opposed to the other way around.
Is a lot of theater in Japan done that way?
I mean, to my knowledge, not necessarily. I mean, no, you know, it's about 1,000 years old, mm-hmm. you know, so. But there's just as much theater in Japan that really has that sort of method acting, actor studio approach to the craft. But Suzuki, he developed his method as sort of a reaction against that.
Sure. Thanks so much for enlightening us on that. And thank you so much, both of you, for being here. Dads, I almost said Reader's Theater, a staged theater production tonight at the Uptown Arts Bar, 7 o'clock p.m., 3611 Broadway, their website address, kcpublictheater.org. I want to thank my guests, Elizabeth Bettendorf-Bowman, the Executive Artistic Director, and Nathan Bowman, the director of the show, Dads, happening tonight at the Uptown Arts Bar at 7 o'clock p.m. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Stay in touch. We're going to take a break. When we return, it is February, and February is Black History Month, and in connection with that, Damon Russell Armstrong from the Kansas City Black Repertory Theater will be here. He's going to tell us about their production, Colored Museum. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. We want to thank Russ. He does the freeze frame feature every week here on the Arts Magazine program. You can also catch Russ at various times on Channel 4 in the morning. Usually they do their features on Friday morning of the new movies that are coming out this week. Russ has been around doing things for KKFI a long time. Very, very good contributor to the art scene here in Kansas City. Well, welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. It is February. February is Black History Month. So in connection with that, I thought it would be wise to ask the new Kansas City, fairly new anyway, Kansas City Black Repertory Theater to be here and talk about their upcoming production of The Colored Museum. Damon Russell Armstrong is here with us. He is the Executive Artistic Director, but he's been on this show many times in connection with other roles he's done locally, The Unicorn, The Coterie, Theater for Young America. In fact, you came one time in connection with that. The American Heartland Theater, the Living Room Theater, the Chestnut Fine Arts Center down in Olathe, the new theater restaurant, Kansas City Actors Theater, and others. Oh, let's see. What other credits? I have other credits.
Oh my God.
I found for Dan Ron.
How long is this list?
The Arizona Theater Company. The Show Palace in Florida, or Show Place in Florida.
Show Palace.
Show Palace in Florida. The Paper Mill Playhouse in New Jersey. Now, is that the one where Rose Marie often performed even in her latter years?
Oh, yeah. It's considered an off-Broadway theater, even uh-huh. though that it is in Jersey. But a lot of shows that they've produced, that was the next stepping stone was Broadway. So, it has a rich, rich history.
But they are known to have, like the now late Rose Marie, but she lived to be in her 90s.
Yeah.
And I believe Kay Ballard appeared. Kent Barnhart told us one time about a show he saw there. And it was three of those ladies doing duets.
Oh, that must have been amazing.
Pieces, all at the Paper Mill Playhouse. But a famous place to to work as well. Let's see, the palace in New Hampshire?
Yes.
Okay, they have a palace in New Hampshire?
Oh, yeah. They have one of the great old theaters. If you travel across America, you can see some of these great houses of that theater took place. And because, of course, it was well before television, so it was the only form of entertainment. And you would have these moguls build these huge theaters that seem to be in the most unusual places, like Flint, Michigan, has an amazing theater there. And of course, you know, after the shutdown of the motor industry there, it just kind of became a desolate wasteland. But they keep that theater up and going.
Yeah, they should continue to have shows there.
Yeah,
as long as they can afford to keep the building open, of course. But they
exactly.
should have shows in those old places because they're.
A testament to time.
Yes, they are. And it gives you an idea of what things were like. Well, they've done that here, I guess. You have the Folly Theater. The same thing was done with the Folly.
And the Uptown Theater.
The Metropolitan Ensemble Theater wants to reopen the Warwick.
Yeah,
that's
on the list. Yeah.
But that was a showplace in its day.
Yeah.
Now, Damon was with us here in Kansas City for quite some time, went off to New York. I remember that.
Yes.
Did some shows in New York. Came back. Went back to New York then for some other things.
Some more theater.
I guess that's what it's like. When you went off to New York the first time, what kind of things did you do in the big city?
When I first went off to New York City, it was to go to school. So attended some classes at the prestigious NYU as well as America's Dramatics Academy. And from there, graduated and went on to work and live out of a very small cardboard box in New York City with four other people.
Well, it's like that
was the life.
I know other
I enjoyed
people
it.
Who have been there. The apartments are very small, but they're very expensive.
Yes. So you have to take on many, many roommates who all do what you do. So hopefully there's a changing of the guard, so you're never there when everybody else is there.
Yeah, well, or someone is always working.
Yes.
That would be another thing.
Yeah, my things spent more time in New York City than I did because, of course, New York is the mecca for all theaters around the world to come and audition.
Oh, sure.
So the likelihood that you can spend a stretch of 6 months in New York City is...
If you don't mind a short story, and then we'll get on to why you came.
Oh, yeah.
But I know some folks who went to New York to do that, and they did the audition thing all around. The buzz got around that, you know, a major company was auditioning for a show in another part of the country. Mm-hmm. And they were all excited about these auditions coming up. And the person I knew went to that audition and found out that it was the Kansas City Repertory Theater that was casting. So,
nice.
But these things happen.
Oh, yeah.
These things happen. Now, in your travels around, I assume there is a... Isn't there a black repertory theater in Harlem, for instance?
Yes. And in Baltimore... Miami.
St.
Even.
Louis.
Well, St. Louis for us would probably be the most known and famous one that was started by Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis, which was one of the reasons coming up, I always wondered why we did not have one in Kansas City, though Metropolitan Ebony Ensemble and MCC Players, uh-huh. I think were two theater companies as I was coming up, but nothing on par with what they have in St. Louis. But I was just wondering why we didn't have one, because, you know, stories should be told, because that is the way that we come to some sort of understanding between men and women, between races, is the stories that we tell.
Yeah, you saw some of these places, and you decided to start this. You know, it's a daunting task to do this.
It's still to this day.
Oh, sure.
I'm 3 years in, and it's still every day a daunting task.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to consider. It's very hard to find a home, first of all. There's
so
many theaters.
So many
even
theaters.
Within the last year or so, some of the theaters have had to move, and it's hard finding a home.
Yes,
it really is.
Just finding space is a daunting task of its own. But we're very appreciative that Kansas Cityans are used to startup theater companies and will follow us from place to place as long as they know where that place is.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. But one thing you don't have a problem with is a plethora of scripts. There's a lot of scripts of shows that haven't been done a whole lot. And Colored Museum, the current show you're having that will open February 15th and run through March 4th at the Arts Tech Building.
Yes.
That's obviously one you picked. Why did you pick the Colored Museum? As I read about the show, it was an unusual plot, in some ways maybe a foreshadowing plot that also looks back over its shoulder at the same time.
Exactly.
So I think you should explain the plot line.
And just as we were saying, Kansas Cityans follow you from place to place, I wanted to point out for folks that were used to seeing us at Arts Asylum, uh-huh, that this, again, is going to be at the Arts Tech Building, is 1522 Holmes.
They sound like they're close together.
Yes, because Arts Asylum is on 9th Street, uh-huh, and again, this is at 15th.
Okay.
And
so,
Holmes.
So they're not far together. What's the best way to get to Holmes up there? You cross over I-70 and you go north on. Is Paseo the best road?
You can take Paseo and come across 18th. Everyone knows the historic 18th and Vine, uh-huh, district. So if you come across 18th to Holmes and make that right there, you're three blocks away. Okay. From 15th Street.
So that's where you will be, I guess.
Yes.
for this show or for other shows up there?
Certainly for this show. Arts Tech is an organization that engages students, children, through various mediums of art. So they do everything from painting to drawing to mask making to ceramics. And so I'm incorporating some of their work into the show. So when you come to the show and the hour before, you're walking through a gallery, hence the Colored Museum. Sure. You can walk through the gallery and actually purchase the art of the students.
But probably not till the show's over.
Yes.
Because you'll run out of jobs.
We'll put a red dot on it for you and hold it until March 4th, and then you can come by and pick up the things that you've purchased.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm very excited to engage with those students there. But the Colored Museum, interesting play, as you were saying. George C. Wolfe, who was the artistic director at the Public Theater in New York City, most folks know Joe Papp's Shakespeare in the Park. It's all of that company. He was the artistic director and is a writer as well, and was approached some 25 years ago now to write a black play. And he said, "What's a black play? why does it have to be black?" No, but it really made him think about what that meant, a black play. And so with the Colored Museum, his focus is for us to look at the past, let it go, to embrace the future. But if you don't know your past, how can you move forward?
True.
So I want people to come to the show and ready to laugh, because by today's standards, you would think the show was written by Dave Chappelle, because it's satirist humor where we take a look at some very interesting and sometimes serious issues, but with a comedic spin on them. So a lot of times you'll be laughing out loud, and then you'll go, "Ha ha ha, ooh, should I be laughing at that?"
I know. Sometimes, Dameron, we're afraid to laugh, especially in these politically correct times.
Right.
We're afraid to laugh sometimes.
Right. But I think comedy always has had that effect to allow us to then open up a conversation by approaching it funny. And I think we even see that to this day. SNL, Saturday Night Live, did a skit about the Me Too movement, uh-huh, which is a very serious, serious issue. But because they were able to put it on the table in a way that people would open up to it, the conversation continues to this very day. Uh-huh. So I don't think that we are doing anything new with this particular play, but what it is, as you were saying, the plethora of material that I have of shows that were never produced in Kansas City during their heydays is endless. And this play could have been written yesterday because of some of the same issues we are dealing with.
Sure. Explain for the folks as best you can the idea Well, an airline. I'm going to let you do all the surprising stuff. An airline is involved, but a very unusual airline.
Oh, yes. The show is separated in 11, and they call them exhibits because, again, the colored museum. And so there's 11 vignettes or 11 exhibits. And the first one that you're introduced to is Miss Pat. And Miss Pat presents for you as a flight stewardess. But as she begins to speak, you realize that you're on board a slave ship. But her demeanor is still that of a flight attendant who's there to... I tell the young lady who plays her, it's like, I need for you to be a used car salesman so that you can show us that this is a really good idea. As she tells you to fasten your shackles.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thought I had exactly. Shackles would be in place of a seatbelt.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And I took that line and put it on the poster because it was just, it's one of those lines in the play that just kind of sticks with you. Fasten your shackles. That's right. Going to be a bumpy night.
I bet it will be. So it's a series of, did you say 11 vignettes?
Yeah. Yes, 11
vignettes. Just touch on a few of them for the folks.
So there's Miss Patch. There is one that really takes a look at the family nucleus and how with all that folks have going on, sometimes even within the Black community, that family nucleus has been allowed to fall by the wayside. And so there is a young lady who comes on who talks about wanting to have love in her life. And the underlying story is that she has a baby in order to feel love because she's not getting that from her family unit, which is a very serious topic and one in which has been spoken about before of teenage pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Why does the child need to feel like that a baby will make them whole? And it's because they're not receiving that love from their parental units. So it's as serious as that to a drag queen talking about cultural issues. The World According to Miss Raj is one of my favorite ones because you kind of look at it as a zoo exhibit because she's just so over the top and out there. But then by the end of it, she begins to indict us as a society about homelessness and all these other issues. And you leave going, okay, that was funny and in my face. Yeah. So throughout the play, it just goes back and forth from being the last mama on the couch is one of the exhibits. And George C. Wolfe really takes a look at acting styles and what was okay for African-Americans to act like in different styles. So he goes everywhere from this particular vignette. On the outside, looks like we're poking fun at A Raisin in the Sun because that is the setup of the piece. But it's really what is palatable to society when it comes to seeing African Americans on stage.
Okay, you know, Raisin in the Sun was groundbreaking.
It was groundbreaking,
especially the family relationships and the dichotomy. And was it the mother wanted? Wanted the money for, I guess she wanted to buy a home, as I recall.
Yes.
And wasn't the son wanted to open a liquor store.
Right. And the son is 30 plus years old and living at home and is a chauffeur living at home with his mother and his wife and his son and his sister. And so that just kind of represents the heavy load that the African-American male was dealing with. And so wanting to have something of his own, like a business, mother could not see her way of giving him the money because it was liquor. He wanted to open a liquor store. And her Christian ideas of that were that was not anything that she wanted to be a part of. And so there's a struggle there of generation that play looks at.
So, and you try to, in your satirical way, well, the playwright, in his satirical way, tries to get a different glance of these situations.
Yes. Yeah. And the different styles of acting and what was okay for how African-Americans were being portrayed.
Yeah. Yeah, what... once this show wraps up, you have other shows on your schedule.
Oh, yeah. we don't stop. This show closes March 4th. On March 21st, a turnaround of 2 weeks, we'll be bringing to Kansas City for the first time the professional stage debut of Passing Strange. This is a show that should be on most people's tongues because... Spike Lee has directed the film version of the show. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe there's a revival of it coming back to Broadway this very year. So get out to the Black Rep and say you saw it in Kansas City first.
Yeah. How were you able to get the rights if it's going back to Broadway? Yeah.
We got them so early, a year in advance. So, that was before they were able to pool the rights so no one else would be able to do it. And I think, well, we are a small company, so they don't think they're going to have much competition.
Oh, I see. I see. Well, they may be surprised. You've done musicals in the past. Any more of those coming up?
Yeah, we wrap up the season May 31st through June 24th with the hit musical Memphis, which... again, is a really great story based on a DJ in Memphis who was one of the first to play what they used to call race music. And so chronicles his life and that of an African-American singer. And as you as the story unfolds, you come to understand that it was his idea was the precursor for American Bandstand. He would have the kids come together. They would spin music and they would dance. But the folks from up north, strangely enough, came down and said, oh, we can't put integrated television on. And so they took it back. And when it made it to Philadelphia, it was the American Bandstand.
Yeah, when did Soul Train start? That's the first 70s. Big one that I remember.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. That was 70s.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing musical with just fantastic music in it. So be ready to dance. This is one that you will not be able to sit still in your seats.
In future years, what kind of shows are you thinking about putting on?
Well, I'm trying to incorporate, as I have thus far, more community involvement. I think our success has been that we have built a bridge for people who have been disenfranchised from theater, a way to get to the theater. So every show that we've done, we've managed to bring a new community member who's never been on stage other than perhaps in church.
Uh-huh.
So more shows that I can do that engage the youth of our educational component, as well as those from the community.
I noticed on your website you have a lot of connections in doing programs with the schools. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah, RISE, Repertory in School Empowerment Program. These are programs that we're working and engaging students through playwriting so that they can develop their own voices. And when I speak to the students, that is what I say to them is, I'm really not trying to make you an actor. But whatever field you go into, whether that's engineering or architecture or doctor or lawyer, you must be able to articulate with the written pen or verbally what your hopes, your dreams, your thoughts are. So that is really the focus of that educational component that we have now at Ruskin High School and Hickman Freshman Center.
Is that where you went?
Yes. I'm an alumni of Ruskin High School.
Is that, is that the reason you wanted to go back down there to do your program?
Yes, and when the opportunity presented itself, I was like, this is kismet.
To go back to your old school
and yes,
do something and go, there, that would be a lot of fun. I haven't been asked to go back to mine, but I would if I were.
Yeah. It's great to give back, which is another thing you want to instill into the students is just that community connection.
Uh-huh.
And certainly going back to my old high school is great fun.
What kinds of things do you try to get across to them when you do your workshop?
To open themselves up, to... we give them a safe place to speak. And so in the first year, from outline to performance, we were able to engage these students on a level where they came out talking about social issues, politics, sexuality, all of these things that really blew our minds, and in a writing style that was so more advanced than I was when I was in the ninth grade.
Well, sure. I mean, we've all learned a lot since then.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice that you do that. And that probably helps the reputation of your theater as well.
Yes.
It's a lot more people pointed in your direction to see your shows.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh,
definitely.
Yeah, and you can even bring the cast over there. And, anyway, yes. It's not my decision, but I think that would be a kick to do that. I remember performers coming over to our school and doing things occasionally on a small level.
Yeah, yeah. The great thing is that we were able to have those students perform some of their works in the 2017 Fringe Festival alongside professional actors.
Sure.
So, again, it just opened a whole new world up to them, and that's really what we're all about.
Okay, in the few minutes we have left, let's get on to the logistics here. February 15th through March the 4th. Sometimes it said 7:30 p.m. Sometimes it said 7. All the matinees, though, were at 3 o'clock.
Yes.
So I guess they need to consult the website to find out.
Yes, go to the website because it's Thursday through Saturday most weeks at 7:30. The 7 o'clock you were speaking of will be February 19th, which is the industry night and Black Archives event night. So that one is at 7. All the rest of them, 7:30. And then, of course, the matinees on Sundays are at 3 p.m.
Okay. That's for to see the show, The Colored Museum.
Yes.
Running February 15th through March the 4th. Do you want me to give this number?
Our Arts Tech.
816-663. That's how it starts. Uh-huh. That's not your personal cell.
No.
You don't want to get a call at 4 in the morning? You don't.
No.
816-663-9966 for more information. Probably best to go to their website.
Yes.
BRTKC.org. Just remember, Black Repertory Theater, Kansas City. BRTKC.org for more information to see the Colored Museum. Opens up in another week, February 15th, runs through March 4th at the Arts Tech 1522 Homes. It's not the Arts Asylum, but it's very near there.
Yes.
And if you MapQuest things, you need the zip code 64108. That's the same one as downtown because you're real close to downtown.
Oh, yeah.
You're just on the other side of the freeway system.
Just on downtown. The south side of 70.
Thanks so much for coming here.
Thanks, Michael.
Damron Russell Armstrong, the Executive Artistic Director of the Kansas City Black Repertory Theater, where they are doing The Colored Museum, beginning February 15th, and it will run through March 4th, 11 vignettes of things that will make you think.
Yes.
Sounds very much like that. Thanks so much for being with us. You might catch Damron. I don't know. Are you going to be performing? We just have seconds. Any other theaters other than your own?
My life is Black Repertory Theater of Kansas City for now. Okay. So you come by the office and see me there, or come by the theater and see me there.
Not going to see you at TYA or anything like that for a while?
Not for a while.
Okay. I've seen you there before. Thanks so much for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
The Jazz Insider is next. He's going to have some great jazz for you this afternoon. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. And once again, thank all of you for contributed. The phone lines are still open, I believe. If that 888-931-0901 number is not operative, go to kkfi.org or call our office number. Someone will be up there to take your pledge. Thanks so much for all of us. Until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at Crossing the Road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.